This is the Home Tech Podcast, show number 69, recorded on April 12, 2012. I'm your host, Jim Carlson, broadcasting live and commercial-free from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in kind of a rainy and stormy. We've got a stormy weekend coming up here, Bellevue, Nebraska, and posted each week with world-class show notes out at the AverageGuy.tv. I should probably say world-class show notes that Andrew didn't do. You can contact the show podcast at theAverageGuy.tv. Or track me down on Twitter at Jay Collison. Of course, I started a new Twitter account just for the show you can follow announcements about what's going on with show times. Normally, I'll announce if it's going to be late or on time. Just follow at theAverageGuy.tv. I've also added the Stitcher app and a Stitcher link. If you haven't tried Stitcher yet and you haven't found a podcatcher or a way to listen to podcasts, automatically, Stitcher's a great way to do it. In that case, you want to watch your video or watch your data plan, because Stitcher is streaming only. But if you wanted to try some podcasts out and you got plenty of bandwidth and you don't get killed by your bandwidth provider on your phone for doing it, give Stitcher a try. Just try it out. Stitcher.com and look for the Home Tech Podcast out there. You can add us and listen to the show. Of course, I have all the other links for both RSS feeds as well as iTunes out on the site. Just go to theAverageGuy.tv. All right, we're back for another week, and I've got one of the regulars with me, and of course, coming in and off holiday, and he took a break from work, and he just took his headset off, so he can't hear me now, but yep, that's back on. Welcome back to the show, Andrew Morris. Good to see you.
Hi, Jim. Good to be back in the seat. It's been feels like it's been months and months and months.
I know. It's been a little sporadic. Work has been. It seemed there was like a virus or a threat of a virus or something like that, and I don't feel like I've seen you since that happened.
Yeah. There was that whole Microsoft patching episode, and then we've had a project that's been worth seven figures. We've been trying to get across the line, so that one's been all-consuming for a couple of weeks. And then Easter, we decided we needed to have some time out. So,
well, glad we almost had you in the show last week for a few brief moments, and then your Wi-Fi kind of crapped out on you, and we lost.
Yeah. One of the downsides of being in a rural country town with less than stellar internet connection.
Isn't that all of Australia, or?
Oh, no, not at
just
all.
Just kidding, Rennie. Don't kill me. Well, Andrew, glad that you've made it out, of course, with us and back in his normal rotation and back. Rich, I haven't seen you in a while. How you doing, Rich?
Pretty good, Jim. Been playing with my new phone here, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But wait a minute, let me shut that off. I didn't do that. I'm just queuing up a little video I did of my granddaughter, 2 years old. Hang on a minute. I'm sorry.
No, that's right.
We went hiking in a park, and she is running through the leaves and sitting down and tossing them up in the air. It's a great age. 2 years old, she's happy doing anything. Walk down the street, walk up a hill, go to the store. She's just happy to be anywhere. So a lot of fun.
Well, good. Good. Yep. Glad to have you back. Glad you get to enjoy some time with the family. What's over your right shoulder there? What's going on there? Piece of fruit on it? Or?
Yeah, it's a... I'm not even sure what it is, but it's an iMac. It's a G5, I believe. So it's a power PC running Tiger. And a friend of mine at work had it sitting on his office floor. He wasn't using it, and so I looked at it. I'd never owned a Mac, so I said to him, "Hey, what are you doing with that? Can I borrow it?" He says, "Yeah, sure." So nice. I got it here. To tell you guys the truth, I played around with it for a couple of hours one day, and I have not found a really compelling reason to go back to it yet, but it's there.
what version are you running on it? What's
Tiger.
What Mac?
Tiger. Okay. What is that? 10.4?
4.5?
One of those. I thought it was 10.4.11 or something.
Yeah,
it could be.
Okay.
Is that upgradable, Rich, or is it
only up to Leopard? Only up to Leopard. But man, Leopard, it costs a ton of money. And, you know, it's not even the current OS. I mean, they're going to Lion, right? Leopard costs, like, a lot of places want $299 for it. A lot of places where you'd expect to get a decent price for something, they want $299 for the, and I don't think there's an upgrade, actually. I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
You know, guys, I don't really know, but it is. It's a piece of, it's a wonderful thing.
All good. All good. Welcome back, Rich. Good to see you. Tonight, joining us, a special guest and a guy who hangs around the Home Server Show community as well as our home tech community just about every week is Brian Auer. Brian, good to have you on the podcast tonight. Pre-show, we found out you do some Star Wars modification things. I didn't get to hear the whole deal, so tell me what you do on the side there.
It's a customization. We basically, especially going back 10 years ago plus, all those figures and vehicles that never made it, a group of us actually go out and make our own versions of it.
Okay. So you just take the original stuff and then, you know, kind of cut them down and do your own thing, create your own things?
Cut them down. I've actually made my original TIE bomber, which was on the link I posted into the chat, actually made out of PVC pipe.
Really? Wow. All right. So kind of toy creation, modification, make them better than maybe Mattel makes them, huh?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, good. And then what do you do? I mean, what makes the money there? What brings in the cash for you?
I'm a systems manager. I work for a company where you are the world's largest lead smelter. We take all your car batteries and chop them up and make it back to pure lead.
Oh.
Doesn't sound like a lot of fun, but when you consider there's no lead mined in the world anymore except for in China.
Really?
All your lead comes from me.
Really? Or the toys we get from China. Yeah. Thank you for mentioning China.
So,
Rich will be here all night.
So, yeah, system manager, we have a whole whopping 3 people doing admin work there. I'm handle all the application servers, the video servers, which now eat up close to about 800 terabyte of storage.
800 terabyte over how long of a time period?
That's been put in since last August.
Oh, okay. So 800 terabytes since last August.
Yeah, we have a revolving 30 days, but I have a couple cameras that have to go back 5 years because it has stuff used to make crystal meth.
You do that at work?
Wow. Are they taking applications?
No, we have there's red phosphorus, and it's used to make crack cocaine and crystal meth, and
right,
so we have to
I'm trying to keep up with you on this. Why are you telling us this?
Well, but so it's a heavily regulated chemical, right, is what you're saying?
Heavily regulated. We have to have, since we had theft of it at one point, we have to have video back for 5 years.
Okay. Oh, that makes sense.
To make sure if anything ever got pulled or yanked or whatnot.
Right. So how much lead is in an average car? I assume your biggest batteries are your car batteries that you get in, right?
No.
There's bigger ones, like industrial size batteries?
Like your forklift batteries that forklifts run on. Give you about an idea, when we send out a full truck, I don't know if you've ever looked in the back of a semi and seen one fully loaded. We have 3 pallets.
And that's
full.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Just from the weight is what you're... What
just you from mean, the right? weight.
Yeah, yeah. Just 3 pallets stacked, what, 4 feet high maybe? Or
3 feet.
3 feet high. And then how much lead do you harvest out of those? And what happens, I mean, are you guys able to really separate those chemicals out and kind of save them from the you know, making their way back into the environment? I mean, how's that
work? We neutralize the acid. We actually recycle the lead, we recycle the plastic, we make the soda ash, which is the big bulk filler that happens in your powder detergent. Okay. As a byproduct.
Oh, really?
It's a byproduct of our process, and we end up turning around selling that to Procter & Gamble and such as that.
Sure.
We actually, as a scary feature for that, because you sometimes hear about lead smelters in the news because of harmful fumes,
right,
we actually put out cleaner air in 2 of our facilities than we take in.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So you're operating in Los Angeles?
We operate in, yes. Yeah. We actually do. City of Industry, right down from Newegg.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That'd be nice. That if you like in a city like that, if you could take in some of the air and clean it up for them as well.
No, clean it up with our lead smelter.
That's nice. All right. Well, that's kind of cool. So does 100% gets recycled in some form, right? Goes back out in some form, either in lead or this powder for detergents or recycled plastic or
neutralized acid.
Neutralized acid. Okay. Well, that's very cool. Because, when I bought a hybrid, right? I have a 2006 Honda Civic hybrid.
Yeah.
People always make the comment to me. They're like, those batteries are more harmful to the environment harm the environment more when I have to get rid of those batteries than any cost savings or fuel emission savings I would have had in driving the car. So you, as a battery recycler, is that true or not true?
Well, we do, like I said, we do lead acid batteries. What you probably have in your car is a nickel-adium or potential lithium. We have a guy who works our R&D facility that we actually wrote the book on lead acid battery technology. And that's because he has close to about 30,000 patents to his name.
Okay.
We actually are working with a couple of the car manufacturers that we are making lead acid batteries that are a third the cost and the same weight, just about, with the same life expectancy of what you have in current hybrids.
Because we got to get better with battery technology, right? I mean, we can't continue to think. More and more things are running on batteries. We're using batteries more and more in our stuff, right? They've either got to last longer, use less chemicals, be more efficient, right? I mean, that's what's got to happen.
Yeah.
Oh.
We're about to start up with Ford on a project car. We've been running some Honda Insights with lead acid batteries that we've built using these plate technology where we put multiple plates in there.
Sure. Very cool.
It's an intriguing industry, really, the battery industry. That's my background as well. I used to work for an American battery company, GNB, and the technology's just amazing what's coming down the pipeline.
And Brian, how long have you been working there?
Since 2006.
Okay, so a while. And have you seen the battery industry? I mean, you're on the recycling end, but are we getting better with batteries? I mean, are there advancements that are coming out in batteries that are making them better that you know of?
There's definitely some advancements that are making it better. Most of the effort, of course, right now is more focused on the lead acid technology. The bad side of it is, being that we are a recycler, we have two things. We have to fight for scrap.
What do you mean by that?
All of our money is really made on the scrap, buying the batteries. You go to Walmart, you buy a battery. Guess what you have to do? You have to pay $5 to Walmart or whatnot for a battery recycling fee. Mm-hmm. We then pay somewhere around 30 cents a pound to get that battery from Walmart.
Okay, and does Walmart make money? They don't make money off that. That's just a transportation cost.
It's usually a transportation cost. Usually what they have is they go back to the Exides and the JCIs of the world. We actually make most of our money on conversion tolling from a company called JCI, Johnson Controls.
Right,
big company.
Right.
And we basically take their batteries, convert it back to lead for them, and they can go out and do whatever they want.
Okay.
So that's where it really is. It's a fight for scrap. The biggest thing we've had recently is a lot of batteries going down to Mexico or a lot of batteries going to China. And then you turn around and the opposite end of it is, in fact, if we make batteries better, guess what happens? There's less scrap for us to make new lead with.
Yeah, that sounds like an interesting problem, where an industry may not get any better, right? Because it cuts down on that which you make your money off of. It kind of inherently cuts down on that.
Well, like I said, other than China, we are in a set field. There's no more lead being mined. So
yeah,
we recycle batteries, wheel weights, ammunition. We're the only company I know of that gun and ammo sites are not blocked off of our internet filter.
you can get those and convert, pull the lead out of that, and well, very, very interesting. I didn't mean to go that long on that, but I think kind of the dirty underbelly of our technology is the waste components that are created from all this technology that we have. And whether that's the computers that have all kinds of chemicals in them that have to be responsible, you know, be recycled responsibly in some way. I think, Brian, you guys do the big batteries, but think about the millions of little tiny batteries that have, they just get tossed, right? They make their way to the landfill.
Oh yeah, we have recycling programs in that for that. It's sort of great because I just had to replace about $7,000 worth of UPS batteries.
At least you'd have somewhere to recycle them.
Well, think of this. I'm in Dallas, Texas. My smelters are in Indianapolis, New York, and City of Industry. I don't have a place that will pick them up locally. So I literally have to take my batteries back to Interstate, or I have a deal with my local AutoZone, and I take my batteries into AutoZone.
And they recycle them for you?
They put them on the truck, which takes them up to our facility.
Okay. All right. Well, that's pretty cool. I'd like to dig into that a little bit more in the way that technology works. So we don't have that scheduled for tonight. But Brian, good to have you on the podcast, and appreciate you coming out. And of course, you're Yoda Fett in the Home Server. That's your name over there, Home Server Show, right?
That is correct. It's been that way for 20 some odd years, 25 nice. Years.
And you were talking before the show. You go way back, even pre Commodore 64, right, with technology.
I am a PET, Commodore PET user.
And what year?
79.
You gad. So I was Timex Sinclair from 1984. I thought I went back a ways. One of the home server guys posted that on Google Plus this week and said, hey, you remember these? And I had the Timex Sinclair 1000. And that did basically nothing, but it was pretty cool and it was cheap. I think I got it for $100 back in that day, which you think about. You know, computer prices in 1984, that was quite a bit. The computers were expensive.
Oh, yeah.
So, well, anyways, welcome. Hey, speaking of Google Plus, I wanted to first say, hey, have you guys popped out to Google Plus and have seen the changes that took place just over the last couple of days? Of course, we use Google Plus for our Hangouts, and we broadcast across the Hangouts. Maybe part of the problem with our sound as of late, and Google's doing some weird things. I haven't had that same problem when I use Skype, and I hate to go back to Skype, but I might have to at some point if we continue to have the popping and the crackling. But did you guys get a chance? Anybody, Rich, did you get a chance to get out there and check? Have you used Google Plus in the last couple weeks?
I haven't, so I'm looking at it for the first time.
Yeah. Andrew, and have you had a chance to peek at it?
Yeah, I've had a bit of a look after you pinged me about it last night. I think it's... anything that makes your stuff easier to find in Google Plus at the moment is a bit of a benefit. Also, looks like they're becoming a little bit more Facebookish. The fact that you can put in your banners and things like that in your profile now. So, I think it's any change is a good change as long as it doesn't make stuff harder to find.
Yeah, it's real boxy. You know, one of the things that I think most noticeable is the left bar here, and they're calling this a ribbon. And so you've, which is Microsoft terminology.
See you in court.
Yeah.
So the left ribbon, home and profile and explore, Hangouts is there now, has its own tab. The one things I like about that is this more tab. You can actually hide, so say you don't use photos, which I really don't. So I can grab that and drag it into more, and then it hides it for me. If you don't want to, if you want to go back and only see a couple of these, I was listening to this week in Google, and they were talking about this. None of them are Hangout users, but we all are. I mean, we spend a lot of time in Hangouts in this group of folks that I hang out with from a technology standpoint. But... So I like the emphasis on Hangouts. They moved the Hangout, Start a Hangout button over here over in the right-hand corner. But if you go now to the Hangout page, you can see they've kind of updated this. And you can now watch Hangouts. So we've gotten wind that functionality was coming, and it is here. You can, and I still don't know how to do it yet. I got to figure out how, because what I'd love to do is just broadcast this Hangout for folks to listen to directly without having to go live through live stream. That might be an option. Or you can get a list down here at the bottom of all the Hangouts that are open to be joined. And before, you kind of had to go through your stream to find these Hangouts that were out there. And now they're available. If I click on View More, it's going to bring a whole bunch up for me in this Google Plus kind of look. And you can kind of go through. There's kind of some scary people out there in Hangouts. Brian, you a Google Plus user very much?
Not really, just for the home server crowd, really.
Okay. Just kind of follow what's going on out there. So before today, had you been in a Hangout?
No, this is my first time.
Oh, all right. So pretty easy to get in. I mean, not a very difficult, video option to navigate, right?
No, not for me.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I've actually appreciated about Hangouts, is that they're easy to get in and get out of, and it's just with Skype. I don't know. We have so many video problems with Skype, and Google has just seemed to work for me, but. With the current problems I'm having with some of the audio problems, maybe or maybe not. But yeah, and you guys notice anything else in there that kind of stands out at you? Just they kind of squared it up. They made it a little more Facebook-like. Lots of white space.
Yeah, I like the explore button. That's a little bit more accessible, so you can sort of get a bit more of a general sort of feed as to what's going on now, as opposed to having to go into your home and then scroll and scroll and scroll. Similarly, getting to your photos is a bit easier now as well. So you've got that photos button, and then it'll show you the stuff that's live uploaded from your Android phone. Or I don't know if the iPhone does it or not, but then you can just select them and share them and add them to albums and stuff like that, which is kind of nice. And then, of course, they've added a games button, which I hadn't seen previously. So it looks like HTML5 gaming engines are starting to hit Google Plus as well.
Yeah, and I haven't used a single Google game since it came out. I don't know why.
Not even Angry Birds?
No. I've never played Angry Birds.
Oh, come on, Jim. You don't know what you're missing.
Oh, there's no reason. I'm not angry at no birds.
Yeah.
Angry Birds Space, the new one. That's phenomenal.
Well, I do. Here's my kind of my take on this, is I do like the fact that Google is making an attempt to add a little bit more design to their interfaces, as opposed to it used to be, some programmer barfed the info on a page. And, we're sorry it doesn't look very good, but this is its raw format. You want it in this way. Well, okay, maybe. But I do like the fact, especially with Google Plus kind of bringing a lot of their services together, I do like the fact that they are at least making an attempt to add some design to their pages. It's when Facebook was all design and no engineering and Google Plus was all engineering and no design, both of them sucked. Any other thoughts on it? Oh, go ahead, Andrew.
I was just going to say it'll be interesting to see which one becomes more adopted. I think Google Plus is still very much for the I don't want to say geeks, but for the geeks. Whereas Facebook's sort of more for the masses. You don't see your mum or your nana or someone on Google Plus yet.
Oh, it's very simple. Google Plus is for the geeks. Facebook is for the masses. And all the women are now on Pinterest.
That's probably, Brian, you're probably pretty close there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I haven't seen the attraction of Pinterest either, but it's something we have not really covered here on the show. But you're probably right. I mean, and I think the Pinterest interest will spike and go back down, and that'll have been forgotten pretty quick. Yeah, well, so if you haven't checked out Google Plus yet, and there is a redesign, if you didn't like it before, you might want to take a peek at it now and see if there's anything. Tons of white space. In fact, that has been what the biggest complaint, I think, from the tech folks that are out there, just consumes way too much white space for if you go full screen. And so it's, you know, if that's the worst thing they can come up with, it's doing okay. I do like the changes. Rich, any last comments on it? Did you, now that you had a chance to kind of peek at it, anything stand out to you? You're kind of an artist guy. Anything kind of stand out to you?
I'm thinking of the white space thing. Maybe yeah. they'll do something with the themes, put it in the background. Maybe they'll let you drag and drop things into the blank areas.
That would be kind of nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good stuff. Last week I had talked a little bit about, and I think I'd done this on the home server show, of uploading my photos automatically from my Android phone into Dropbox and then syncing that Dropbox folder over to my Windows home server. So they'd be local, they'd be backed up, and they would be in the cloud. And so I hadn't been doing a lot of that, but this week I actually went on my phone, set that up. It uploaded all my photos in the background, and probably one of the easiest solutions to backing up my photos and getting them off my phone, because they automatically go to Google as well, but Google isn't a great sharing tool from, you know, I don't want to store all my photos in Google, right, at least in Picasa, the Picasa application that they have. Dropbox makes it very handy, and I get to those pictures from anything. And so a really nice, slick, if you're not, for me, I was just not getting my pictures off my phone. I have an Android Samsung Galaxy S2 or 2S. I think it's S2. And it's just a great way of getting the photos off your phone and get them. And then for us home server users or anybody that, you know, wants to back them up or have them local at home, when, as soon as you move them up to Dropbox, it automatically then will copy them back down to whatever, you know, whatever sync folders you have. And if one of those happens to be the Windows home server, it'll store them right there and back them up. So if you haven't tried that, give that a shot. Just an update on that. I don't know. Anybody, you know, Dropbox is offering some more storage. Anybody pop out there and take a look at it? Anybody using it?
Yeah, I'm up to 7.5 gig now, just from referral and image and video uploads.
Nice.
So there's a few little dirty workarounds for it. If you drop video onto the... onto your phone, and when you're on your home wireless link, upload it to Dropbox, you get your storage for free. And then I think we spoke about it briefly last week. There's been a few people who've used the Google AdWords campaign to increase it as well.
Yeah, yeah. So you're up to 7. The free version is up to 16 gig now.
Yeah,
which is pretty good.
That's awesome, I reckon, for nothing.
Yeah, not something I would, you know, I mentioned last week Dropbox had some security issues early on. I still don't think I'd put anything that I wanted secure up there. But, Rich, are you using Dropbox at all?
Yeah, I do. Yep. And I was listening to you talk about the security issues, and I'm hoping that, you know, I was hoping that you were going to say that there's nothing happening lately with that. But
no, it's been maybe a year or longer. Since their issues. I mean, I think it was a wake up call. They were a startup and, you know, moving a million miles an hour, and yeah. And then
the thought that crosses my mind is that you know, probably pretty much any of these services are somebody can probably hack them somehow, some way. Whether
if they
social
try hard enough.
Yeah, social engineering or just outright code monkeys. But you know, I don't know. I think it's pretty safe. Nobody I know can hack it, so there you go.
Yeah, one of the things I've liked about the Dropbox, especially with the pictures, is it waits till you're on Wi-Fi, or at least that's a setting that I can set. It waits till you're on Wi-Fi to upload, which I can't say the same thing about the Google upload. And maybe there's a setting in there that I don't have set right, you know, to make it wait. It just, at least the setting I have right now automatically starts. So kind of a nice feature to say, okay, I'm going to take all these pictures, then wait till I hit a Wi-Fi connection before you start uploading them, you know, to Dropbox.
Yeah, I disabled the Google upload thing.
Do you know, Rich, in there, in that setting, is there a setting that says Wi-Fi only?
I didn't look, but now that you say it, I'm going to have to...
Yeah, I'll have to take a peek as well. Maybe we talk a little bit about that when we cover your phone so far. So, Brian, are you taking advantage of Dropbox? I'm sure a guy like you that has almost a... I'm sure you've got terabytes of its stuff at home using cloud and all.
No, well, I use SkyDrive every now and then, basically, to if we have contractors who need, like, the Cisco VPN client, just so they can get a hold of it. have a download for it, since you have to log into Cisco to get that.
Sure.
But other than that, no, I do everything through a VPN connection into my house and put it on the SAN, and the SAN gets synced to work. So.
Really? So VPN, you kind of, for file transfer, you use the overhead of VPN and rather than just drop it somewhere and let the internet take care of it?
single point click on me.
Okay, yeah, and you're probably used to it at this point. It is kind of nice, at least for me, real lazy with Dropbox. I can just throw it in there. I know it'll sync out. So not a bad little solution. Box.com does the same thing. And it's kind of an up-and-coming file sharing, service. So, okay, good enough. Hey, something that we missed last week that had just come out, but I wanted to cover a little bit because Andrew wanted to talk about it a smidge. So there was an announcement last week. Of course, as soon as I say that, Andrew gets distracted. But I will. There was an announcement last week from our friends over at Instagram that they had been purchased by Facebook for $1 billion. Just been waiting to say that all freaking week.
Oh, man.
And which I think is absolutely crazy and insane that a startup that's 15 months old that handles pictures in a social networking environment and I've heard this a million times over the last week and applies crappy filters to them. I'm not an Instagram user, but $1 billion seems a little much. I mean,
I think my coward uses it. He likes it a lot. Where is Howard?
Yeah, but that's using that's using the iPhone version.
That's what you
of
call
phone, right?
Beer baiting for sure.
any of us on here on the panel, have you guys, anybody used an Instagram at this point?
Not here.
Yeah, I've been using it since it went across.
Okay, and Andrew, tell me how you use it. I mean, what's the application for?
Okay, so it's sort of hard to describe what I'm using it for. I'm using it if I'm just wanting to capture something and pretty much throw it out on Facebook or Twitter or something similar to that. It lets you take an image and then bring it down into the Polaroid form factor, so almost your square image, and then you can apply various predetermined effects to it. So
mm-hmm. Retro it, right? I mean,
yeah,
these,
retro.
These filters are to make it look older.
Yeah, correct. So I think the original application that did this was called Hipster, which again was, sort of taking on your Polaroid type of deal, and now this one's Instagram's become very much the volume leader based on, I think, just the fact that it had the iPhone client that was so good. I'm just trying to find some stats for it. There was it has an amazing volume of images that get posted to Instagram every second all over the world. It's just this huge volume, and they don't actually have, or up until now, they never had a business model. But they were, there were thousands of images going up almost every second.
Well, their business model was to be sold to Facebook, right?
Well, yeah. Looking at it now, you'd have to say so.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm sure they didn't know that, but a pretty sweet deal at the end of the day.
Jeez. Oh, yeah.
Some $400 million for the founder, some $100 million for the co-founder. The 13 employees that they had before will make and split somewhere around $100 million, so they'll make just short of $10 million each. It seems like a little bubble-ish for the tech market. Brian, when you heard this news, what were your thoughts?
I'm just figuring out how I can get my coders to help me use my unused SAN right now.
Yeah, you're like, hey, I'll start a photo sharing service.
Sorry.
Yeah, now it's a little perplexing to me. This deal is perplexing. Certainly, there's probably more to it than we know.
It's sort of like, forget the production planning project. Let's make a little thing, something on the side.
Yeah. Well, the scary thing to me is just that this sets a bad precedent, and now there's going to be all these folks who are going to try and build these very, very fast startups that they're going to try and sell. And this is a lightning strike type deal. I mean,
all goes back to Cuban when he sold Broadcast.com for $1 billion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think about the price tag that Skype got when it was first sold to eBay. Think about the price tag that YouTube got when it was sold to Google, right? But those, you know, for every one of those that happens, there's 10,000 startups that die, you know? And I just, whenever I see these kinds of deals, I just get fearful for my friends in the Silicon Valley that all of a sudden there's going to be, you know, 50 copycats who, just like Brian said, who go out and let's figure out a way to code this piece of crap overnight and sell it to somebody for, you know, $1 billion. Well, guys, that doesn't
come on. If you see all the apps that show up on the iPhone, it wouldn't take 5 minutes to do it.
But I think the iPhone, and it probably only a handful of those apps actually make any money in the end. You know, they can't all be making money. So,
I think the interesting thing to say with this will be what Facebook does with it. You know, whether it's going to become an integrated component into the Facebook client or whether it'll remain as a standalone.
Yeah.
Or how it'll work. I've just found those statistics. So, this is that as of August last year. There were 7 million users uploading 1.3 million photographs a day. 150 million photos had been uploaded in total, averaging 15 a second, and there had been 78 million likes on photos, and 8 out of 10 photos have been modified using the application, so adding a filter or an aged look or something like that to it. So that's the sort of volume that this thing's, you know, throwing up onto the net.
Now, what's the deal with Instagram? I didn't know that. I thought they were just, you know, a cool little app to do different filters with, but they're actually an online community. I'm sorry, I didn't know that. So that's news to me. But I'm looking at this. I Googled it, and PC World has this. I'll put a link in the show notes. But basically, they're saying that. You know, users are complaining or they're voicing concern about, you know, Facebook and privacy issues. And I don't know. They must have user groups on this Instagram site. Is that it? Is that part of the deal? Do you guys know?
I don't. This has been the weird part of it is I don't think – I mean, there's 30 million users, and it's a product I rarely even heard about.
Mm-hmm. I haven't even heard of it.
Yeah. Andrew, obviously you had.
I knew of it because a lot of the people I follow on Twitter are iPhone users and using Instagram.
Yeah, well, I think it's some photo sharing that really allows, you know, that really allows some social networking behind it, Rich.
And I think that's what they're concerned about is, you know, Facebook and their privacy issues and. So I think these people that are, you know, sharing on the website are concerned about, you know, I don't know. I'm just, you know, is my data going to be mined? And what's going to happen you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. So. It's been interesting. It's certainly taken the news, the tech news streams by storm over the last week. And anytime that kind of money changes hands, especially from a company, you know, so Apple has $100 billion in the bank. Mm-hmm. Google has $50 billion in the bank. Facebook doesn't have $1 billion in the bank. You know, right? Go ahead, Brian.
Well, take a look at what happened just a couple of weeks ago where Zynga bought out OMG Pop because of the Draw Something app for $210 million. Where did Zynga come up with any money other than the 99 cents my wife deposits every other day for Farmville?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and that's you know, again, that's another once in a lifetime shot on this game. I mean, think about the hundreds of thousands of games that are out there, and this one hit it, you know.
Yeah.
But that's a good point. It's a good point. Well, anyways, wanted to cover that. Andrew, this was your note. Any other comments you have on that?
No, I just think it's going to be very interesting to see what Facebook do with it. I mean, the article that Rich just popped up on from PC World, which I'll just throw into the chat as well, and I'll put in the show notes. You know, Zuckerberg saying that they'll leave it independent and whatnot, but I guess, you know, Facebook have said things like that before, and it's ended up being assimilated. So, the biggest issue or the biggest interest for me will also be what happens with your images. You know, previously they were hitting a social media cloud that really didn't have any ownership issues around it, whereas pretty much everything you load up into Facebook, I think, becomes theirs. So that'll be the interesting one for me. Mm-hmm. You know, is there going to be some Creative Commons issues going on, and you know, will they kill the usage of it as a result of that?
I know there's been a ton of flight already from users afraid of that. You know, they had kind of created their own community there at Instagram, and a lot of folks were there at Instagram because they didn't want to post those things to Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of the I don't want to say the anti-Facebook, but it kind of was for them.
Yeah.
And and so now they, you know, now we're part of the community that we were maybe not a part of.
So yeah, I'm wondering if the app itself is the thing that, you know, channeled all these people to the website, or whether the app itself is just that great. I got a feeling it's probably the website, you know, is more of an attraction than just the app itself. So they could, well, what my reason I said that is that I'm thinking they could just go to another site. You know, maybe they could configure their Instagram app to upload to Redbubble or some of these other sites.
Yeah,
with these communities.
There's never been more engagement around photography, and that is catching. I mean, for whatever reason, and I think it's maybe because everybody has a camera now on their phone that's pretty good for the most part. Mm-hmm. But even that, as I hang around, you know, Mike's show and JPEG to RAW and kind of listen in on that community, there's just kind of been this resurgence in popularity around taking good photos with good equipment, not crappy phones. And so I'm wondering if this Instagram is riding the wave of that photography bubble, so to speak, where everybody's becoming, I should say, and Mike, no take offense to this, but, you know, where a lot of people are becoming photographers and a lot of people have photography interest. And, you know, Andrew, you were kind of a little ahead of it. You were, right? I mean, your photography, you're not doing as much today as you did three or four years ago, right?
Yeah, I peaked too early.
But I think there is a and Mike says in chat, no bubble. And I don't mean to say that in a bad way. I do think it's going through a popularity trend right now where a lot of folks are aware of it and are taking more pictures, and so maybe Instagram is capitalizing on that.
Yeah, I think part of that's the accessibility to good quality imaging equipment as well. So you look at, you know, a digital SLR camera has become a lot more affordable.
Sure.
And then your point and shoot cameras are becoming a lot better in quality.
Yeah, Mike, you know, just said that too.
You know, you can shoot, you know, from a video perspective, you can shoot 1080p off a, you know, $300 point and shoot camera now.
Right.
You know, it's production quality video. You know, there's no.
It's pretty good.
There's no negative to that.
Right, right. Well, interesting enough, we're not the experts on this, but you were going to talk about that last week. Good to talk about this week. $1 billion. A lot of that in Facebook stock, or I think that's how that deal kind of worked.
Yeah.
Certainly, very, very interesting. In the community, and we'll send ripples through the tech community for a long time now. I mean, this is the stuff that tech legends. I mean, the Silicon Valley is legendary for this kind of stuff. And it's one of the things I miss about not living there anymore. Is, you know, I grew up there in the '80s, and it was just Apple Computers is the stuff of legends there. I mean, that Wozniak and Jobs in their first run. And then, of course, that all broke down, and they threw Jobs out, and Jobs comes back. And that kind of stuff, that's the heart of the Silicon Valley. And so, you know, more craziness with this Instagram purchase. So Good stuff. Rich, you have been messing around with your new Android phone. Well, first iPhone, then back, first Android, then back to iPhone, then back to Android.
I love Best Buy. I love Best Buy. I bought an Android phone, Skyrocket, Galaxy S2 Skyrocket, and it had a battery bug and a couple of other things that I thought were glitchy, and it was my first exposure to Android, so I thought, well, you know, I don't know about this. So I went back to the iPhone, and as I was changing over to the iPhone, I mean, this Skyrocket is huge, right? It's 4.7-inch screen. I'm looking at this iPhone going, yeah, I'm really happy, but, like, I'm not smiling. And I just, the next couple of days, I just said, this thing is just too small. So I went back, I did a little bit more research based on your input, and I ended up with a Galaxy S2, which I basically has been really one of the top Android, top-selling Android phones over the last year or so. So what I was going to talk about is that there's some things, and believe me, I'm just a noob at this, so I do not know if any of this stuff matters to most people, but I'm just now digging into it. So one of the number one things about phones pretty much is battery usage. So if you want to figure out what is using your batteries, there's an app, which apps are using, there's an app called Better Battery Stats. It's all one word, Better Battery Stats, that will give you a pretty good idea about what's, you know, so you can see what's using your, now the thing about a lot of these apps is you'll download some app and you'll think, well, I'm not running it right now. Well, it starts itself up. And that's another thing I noticed about the Android system. You know how, like, the old XP systems, you know, you get your mother's PC because it's slow as heck. Well, she's had it for 3 years. She's installed everything. Every toolbar got installed. But all these apps she installs, they're all running in the system tray at startup. That sort of is like, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but that seems to be my experience with Android. You load things on here, and a number of apps will put themselves into the startup, you know? So they're running in the background, or they're at least loaded in the background and taking up some memory. So that's interesting. Another Android app that I've got that I thought made sense for these sorts of things to combat that sort of thing. Because a lot of these apps, what they do is they're free apps. So how they make their money is they put ads in. So they're constantly pinging service to bring down ads.
Yeah, which is annoying.
So I got this thing. Yeah. So I got this thing. You know about host files, right? On Windows machine, if you want to get rid of all the ads and whatnot and protect yourself maybe against bad downloads, bad sites. So I found this host file manager that draws from MV. It's called AdAway. And it draws from a bunch of different aggregators, four different aggregators. One of them is MVP Hosts, and that's a well-known, long-time, respectable host file aggregator. And the cool thing about that is that it updates itself daily. If you are having a problem, you can just open up the app and disable, and you'll go back to your stock, you know, your default host file, which is 127.0.0.1. I think it's the only entry in there. So, and localhost. So that's it. The reason I did that is twofold. For the reason I just told you about how ads are running in the background on a lot of the free apps you're using. The other one is I was on the XDA forum, and XDA is the big dog when it comes to Android, all things Android, hacking Android, fixing Android. And I'm looking all over their site at different things, and every once in a while they come up with these apps that take up my whole screen, and they got this little pinpoint X that you got to try to tap, and you can't tap it. You end up tapping the ad, and I don't want to do that. So I was like, oh, man, how do I stop this? So, I mean, this takes care of that.
Now, Rich, you rooted that phone, right, when you got it?
I did.
How'd that go for you?
Well, my first root, I think I did something typically noobish, which is I installed the international version of the Galaxy S2.
Nice.
And I think as I remember, it hosed my Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi would not connect, and then so I fixed that. ZetoMax was the name of this package that I flashed, and so I fixed it using ZetoMax Unroot. And what happened then was that I could make phone calls. You would hear the ring. You would see it was
really?
Me. And yeah, phone.
Imagine that—a phone call.
Yeah. But there was no voice transmission, so there was no audio. So you'd hear me ring. You'd see it was Rich ringing you. And I'd hear you pick it up. I wouldn't hear you pick it up. You'd pick it up, and I could tell there was a connection, but there'd be no voice transmission.
Yeah.
So what that turned out to be was, is that I had the wrong modem on there. So let me tell you something. If you are somebody that likes to play with computers and hack, and you've got an adventurous spirit, kind of like myself, and you're not afraid, which you should be, probably kind of like myself, you're in for a steep learning curve on these Android phones, but they're a lot of fun. Now, I know you guys have heard this one. You know you can run Ubuntu, or Ubuntu is out there, desktop Ubuntu. You can run it on your Android phones. Did you know that?
Really? No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, I've done it, and it's easy. You just Google search it. You'll find the correct app. Actually, there's an app in the Google Play, right? Google Play.
Now, what's the advantage to running an Ubuntu desktop on Android?
There's no advantage to running it on your phone. It's
right.
It's puny. It's teeny tiny.
Right.
It's terrible. But the thought here is to hook your micro USB out to an HDMI, get a Bluetooth keyboard, and now you're looking at a Ubuntu desktop on your 27-inch screen with a normal-size keyboard. So the idea is you can carry your computer and your phone with you.
Well, now I'm just going to have to get me an Android just to put Commodore 64 on there.
We'll have to get an emulator app on here for that.
I don't need an emulator app. They already have the OS. Commodore Vision runs on Ubuntu.
Brian, when are you going to give up on Commodore 64? You just keep holding on to that thing.
Oh, well, considering it runs my PF Sense and other things.
That's crazy.
There you go, crazy. Man.
So Rich, are you happy? Are you happy with that phone? I know we agonized over that.
I'm pretty happy with it because I'm just busy hacking it and seeing what it can do and then trying to figure out how to get out of this mess, you know?
Yeah. I almost need a second phone so you can hack that phone.
No, I'm good now. I can always get myself out now. I'm good with that. You know, I use an Odin-based flash utility, and I've got the right packages so that I can always get back to square one at least, and I've got my apps backed up. I use Titanium backup for that. I want to tell you guys about this one app that I shouldn't tell you about, but I'm just going to tell you anyway.
Yeah, go.
It's called Wi-Fi Kill. It costs, I think it's $2.99. I don't remember who it was, but you Google one word Wi-Fi Kill, and it basically, as far as I understand, it does an arc poisoning thing, kind of man in the middle thing, on your home network, on your LAN, and you can sit there and knock everybody off the network one by one.
Really?
Yeah. Just a little fun thing you can play on your, do to your wife and kids.
Yeah, that might be helpful before the podcast.
Yeah. Maybe. Maybe. So I saw this thing and I says, nah. This can't possibly work. And I says, let me try.
So, what's the interface look like? I mean, so on your phone, what are you looking at? That Sarah just told me not even think about it.
Do not even think about it. It will say like Jim's PC 192.168.1.1, and there's a checkbox. And if I put that checkbox, if I check that box, dude, you are off the air. And it doesn't even need to be. Actually, it doesn't even need to be Wi-Fi. I can knock somebody that's actually LAN connected off.
Really?
I tested it on my PC. I tested it on my PC sitting in front of me.
Yeah.
So, my hardwired PC, I knocked that off the local, and that's it, man. You do not have no internet connection.
And then, what do you have to do to get the connection back?
You just you shut it off. You shut the service off. So I don't know if you can see this or not, but that's. That's what it looks like. Okay, so you see that gray bar at the top, and it's got a green light in it. If you hit that, that just shuts the whole service off, and all of those things go away. So that's the easiest, cleanest way to just kill it. The service is no longer running. Give it a second so that ARC can, your router can refresh with its little broadcast, and you can get another.
I sense a new device for right before the show. Although I haven't had a bandwidth problem in a while, but that's very cool. Very good, Rich.
It's pretty neat. Yeah.
Good stuff. Hey, Christian, join us in the middle of Rich's coverage on his Android phone. And Christian, you're in a new status as a
new status.
Share with us. Big day for you, right?
Yes, I made it out of a New York State road test with 0 points off. So had a perfect run with the folks who do all things with licensing, and so.
So if you live in the city of Buffalo, make sure you call Christian and see if he's on the road.
It's going to cost you for the gas money, though, let me tell you.
I'll stop the road trip to Zadler's house now.
I just meant if you're driving, we probably don't want to be on the road, right?
Everyone else knew where you were going, Jim.
He passed on the first try. He's a pro.
He is a pro. And you missed. You got his perfect score. I would expect nothing less of you, Christian.
Yeah, that's what my dad said, and I wasn't surprised.
What is it like getting a driver's license in the state of New York? Is it a big bureaucratic nightmare?
Sort of. I would imagine it's much harder to do in New York City just because I can't imagine anyone learning how to drive in such a monster place like that. But you get your permit when you're 16. It's 6 months before you're eligible for your road test, so you drive around for 6 months, and then you have options. Option A is you take your road test after that 6 months after having sat for a 5-hour defensive driving course, or you take driver's ed from the beginning, and that kind of covers the defensive driving aspect. But I did not take driver's ed, so I sat for the 5-hour course and then scheduled my road test, which normally around here takes, from the day you schedule it, around 2 months to actually be tested. But they got a couple new testers in the area that are working kind of double time, so I was actually able to schedule like 27 days after my test, so it was pretty good timing.
Is the test, there's a written portion and a driving portion, right, still?
Not for the actual driver's test, no. The written portion is when you get your permit. It's a 20-question multiple-choice test.
So you got to clear the paperwork first.
Yeah.
And today was the actual driving test on the road.
Right, and then once you pass, they give you a little, it looks like a little store receipt that you stick behind your, here we go. All right.
Let's see the goods.
You stick this little receipt thing that says you passed.
Yeah.
Behind your
driver's license.
Permit. This is
your permit, right? Right.
So, yeah. This is still permit. The permit, and then they mail you your license in like 4 to 6 weeks, I think they said. You can still drive as long as it's a license, as long as you have the little receipt thing with your permit.
So of course you grabbed the car and headed out, right? As soon as you came home, you go pick up your friends.
Right. The only restriction with my DJ class license is that I have to wait till 18 to be able to drive after 9, unless I'm coming back from either school or work. So from 9 p.m. to 5 a.m., I'm capped until.
You cannot be in the road.
I am so glad that I did not. No, man.
It's been a long time, Rich.
There were no restrictions. Yeah, well, there was no restriction, but there were no cars on the road. Man, I live up in the
road. Well, they invented cars afterwards, did they, Rich?
We didn't get them up here until 1980.
I grew up on a farm. I was 15 with a hardship license.
Yeah. Here in Nebraska, I think they can get their permit if they're on the farm as early as 14. And then they can, I think they can drive
young.
With a waiver at 15 or 15 and a half or something like that. So it's real young. Yeah. All my boys waited till 17, 18 before they got their license. Christian, you're eligible at 16, right?
They're
in
state New York.
And you kind of delayed a little bit for it?
Yeah, I waited till I was eligible like December 11 or 10 or something like that.
Yeah.
But I waited, like, I was eligible for my permit for 6 months before I got it, and then I've been eligible for like maybe 9 months, so pretty good timing. And then when I turned 18, so I got about 6 months. No. Yeah, six or 7 months to go on that, and then they automatically mail you the full class license. So
okay.
So then I can there's no restrictions once I mailed that.
Well, big day for you. Congratulations, and let me know when you're driving.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. You for you really practically. I mean, it'll help this summer, right? As you're out of state in your internship, you'll be able to. I assume that'll. You could take in a car with you. I mean, is that
kind well? Of... Not sure yet, to be honest. Okay. So,
all right, come on, squeeze Gary for the car.
I've been working on it. I've been working on it. Working the angles. No worries.
I like it. I like it. Well, it's good. It's good.
The $5 per gallon gas that we're probably going to get.
I know, it's pretty ridiculous. Although I did see a drop a little bit today. At least here in Nebraska, it backed off a smidge. So maybe we'll get back to it. So, well, Christian.
It's over $6 a gallon. It's over $6 a gallon in Australia at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's nasty.
Yeah, for sure. Brian, you're down in Dallas, right?
Yeah.
What's the average down there?
Well, normally we've been running about 363, but this weekend I have a 30-cent hike because I'm right beside Texas Motor Speedway.
Ah, all right.
So I have all the NASCAR folks coming in literally about 3 miles from my house. So
it'll hit $4 for you.
Oh, it'll hit $4.25 around me. Yeah. So I don't drive or go do anything on weekends where NASCAR's coming in. It's too crazy.
Yeah. So being in the oil, in the heart of the oil country here in the United States, where it used to be, no break for you. You guys are basically paying what we're paying up here.
Yeah, nowadays. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Cool. Okay. Well, last thing, Brian, we wanted to bring you in a little bit. I know to get back to your Commodore 64 theme. Of course, one of the legends, and I can't. How do you pronounce his last name? Jack Tramiel.
Tramiel.
Yeah, Tramiel. 83, founder of the Commodore, and did you know him at all, or what was his work on the project there with Commodore 64?
He back in the 60s and 70s, he created Commodore. They were originally calculators, just like everybody else in the world back then. He created the original PET, and then he created Commodore 64 in 82. In 84, he was ousted out due to internal struggles that led to the adoption of the Amiga class and such as that. And so he went around and borrowed money and bought Atari and created the Atari ST.
Which was, and I don't remember, which one was the ST? What?
It was the 8-bit one that used to battle the Commodore quite a bit, Apple II, all looking for shelf space at Babbage's.
How did the cartridges fit in?
Cartridge on the ST was dead center up top.
Okay, straight into the top, right?
Yeah.
Right in the top.
Yeah.
And it came with the keyboard?
Came with the keyboard.
Is that right? Okay, I remember those. Yeah. So, and so he passed away here just last week, right? 83?
Just passed away this last week, 83.
So. We're going to start, you know, a lot of those guys that founded a lot of the stuff early in the 70s and 80s. I mean, those guys are getting up there. And we're going to see a little bit more of this, you know, happening. We're kind of losing our IT legends. You know?
Well, especially for me, Jack was always he was always interesting because back when Bill Gates' motto was, or Microsoft's motto was, a computer on every desk in every home in the world. And Steve Jobs was always about the experience and everything else. His model was always a computer for the masses, not for the classes. So more than anyone, he really helped bring the computers to us, to all of us enthusiasts. Most of us usually started on a Commodore or a Trash 80 or something like that. And the Commodore 64 to me was always, I gosh on it so much, but the Insonic Soundscape chipset, which was for the longest time the biggest competitor to the Sound Blaster back in the day even, was created by Commodore. All right. Mm. The parts of the original Commodore 64 chipsets became Cirrus Logic, which used to rule the graphics industry for the PCs up until 95 or so.
Sure.
So much of that early stuff that we take for granted from 90, early 90s originated from the Commodore brand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you think about those early 90s as there was a changeover. I must say early 90s as there was a changeover to the PC and the prices dropped and we began to really see PCs everywhere.
Oh, 1994 Christmas was the year that PCs hit. Everybody in the world I know have got a 46DX266 with a Mitsumi IDE CD-ROM drive and Encarta. Mm-hmm. I worked at Microsoft at the time, so trust me, I know how many calls I got that year.
Yeah, well, they were still fairly expensive, though, you know, 93, 94. Those are still retailing at, you know, $2,500. Yeah, $2,500. I worked at a computer store in 98 when the bottom, when AOL came in and offered, you know, free computers if you bought their service for 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
And it really kind of took the bottom out of the market. And we just saw, I think of those years as being the years where we got PCs, you know, every house got a PC because everyone got subsidized by AOL.
Oh, yeah. You had that. You had the e-machines back in the day before they were bought up by Gateway, I believe.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, AOL is more of a media company today than they are a technology company. You know, I just learned something. My wife, who's in chat, said she learned BASIC on a TRS-80,
yeah,
or we like to call it Trash-80. I did not know that.
Well, speaking of AOL, they just laid off the AIM development team. So AIM is officially dead.
Oh, thank God for that.
The chat, AIM the chat client.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, that goes back. I didn't know that was still around. Yeah.
Didn't AIM effectively become Jabber?
I don't know.
AIM,
right. The chat client. Christian, you know what we're talking about?
Oh, it became Jabber. I thought he said Java. I'm like, wait.
No,
what?
Jabber. So I think a lot of the technology and the code went into Google Talk. Because it's a Jabber client as well.
Oh, yeah, maybe
Jabber or Java.
Jabber.
I think most of that was actually
Jabber. There we go.
Talk like an American, Andrew, for God's sakes.
I'll start speaking fluent American soon.
Dude, we need subtitles underneath you, okay?
I can get abused like this anyway. I don't have to do a podcast for it.
Your wife typing over in the corner. He said this.
Oh, Andrew walked away.
Oh, come on, Andrew.
Come back here. Oh, he's back. You. Oh, good.
Now there's a spider walking up the flywire screen, and it's on the inside, not the outside. So it's about to be a dead one.
No. It's an Australian spider. They're small.
Yeah, it's one of those little bastards that jumps. So I'll be back in a sec.
All right, mute your mic before you go.
Yeah, I don't want to hear the screaming.
Is the spider screams. You know, I've kind of switched over.
I don't think he was worried about the spider screaming, Jim.
Oh, Andrew.
Back on topic, I've kind of moved over to Skype for my IM client. That has become my kind of IM of choice.
Me too.
I don't know if that's because we use that tool for in our community, or if that's kind of the general direction that most people are headed. Skype's right now there's almost 25 million people online with Skype right now as we speak, right now. So it seems pretty popular at this point. I know, Christian, you're all the way on Skype, right? I mean,
yeah.
You guys do homework and stuff on Skype?
Yeah.
So it's funny because periodically I do this, Rich, with you or Mike Howard or even you, Christian. We'll start a conversation on Skype text. Hey, what's going on? You around? Whatever. Yo. We start a lot of conversations with yo. And an update. There's the bug killer. I wonder if he can turn his camera. That would be, here it goes. It's dead. And then a lot of those conversations turn into video by the time we're done. And we just stay in. I mean, even though we've got Google Plus Hangouts, we don't make that jump to Google Plus. We just stay in Skype and take it there.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew's coming back. So, yeah, I think kind of the default IM maybe is moving over to Skype in most cases. Andrew, can you hear us? How'd it fare?
Yeah, I can. Yep. Not well for the spotter.
Well, that's a
that's good to hear.
That's a good one. Now more team fast knockdown bug spray.
Did it kind of jitter on its way down, or what was the body action?
Oh, God. You should have got the camera on it.
I tried.
There was a fair string of web, whatever that web shit is, spin come out of it, as off the window ledge.
Nice. Well, hey, one more thing for Brian. Brian, you put in the show notes, Microsoft Home OS announced. I know nothing about that. Give us a quick rundown on it.
All right. Especially nice for PC Doc and me. We both are home automation enthusiasts. Home automation, what does it let you do? Turn on lights, thermostats, open your garage door, home security. Microsoft is now releasing a home OS to drive these various devices, usually using Z-Wave technology.
Which Z-Wave is kind of the de facto protocol, or not protocol?
It's one of the two big ones. You used to see all these X11.
Yeah.
Like cameras.
Right.
You have X11, you have Z-Wave, there's another one out there that's used a little bit.
Okay.
But you can support anything with a couple different devices. I actually run about three small little VMs that run my servers to do all my home automation stuff.
And here. What's it based on here? I'll throw up the site there. You can throw your link in chat if you want to. Or I'll do that for you. Well, keep talking.
But it's they got the thing, the initial OS ready. They have it going out to schools. I'm trying to get into the beta on it so I can do some development and testing, because it's based off ladder logic, which is what I spend my good portion of my days doing, which is programming plant automation code for our SCADA networks at the plants to control all of our thermals and belts and airflow and everything for producing lead. I turn around and use it at home because I like to have my yard auto water whenever it gets to a certain dryness in the yard, or it hits 8:30 at night and my stepson's TV automatically gets turned off, as well as his lights and computer.
Nice. So time for bed.
Time for bed, and I don't have to get out of the easy chair. Come on. I'm all American.
Yeah. And so what's this based on? What's this? What are they using?
I don't know what they're using underneath. I actually believe it is the Microsoft Sync technology from my Ford Edge.
Really? So it would be embedded?
It's going to be like an embedded OS.
Right.
From what I've been reading so far, there's a good chance I'm going to be actually get this run on my Raspberry Pi whenever I get it.
Oh, yeah. It's a very light, you know, that embedded product. I think that's what it's called, right?
Yeah.
Windows embedded. Came out of the old CE days, I think.
Yes, it did.
The development from CE. Very light OS, and actually it shows up in the strangest places. You might see it. I see kiosks using it from time to time. It makes a great, like, gas stations use it as the OS to run their pumps and their
gas stations. I've programmed gas stations before. Think of every time you see a Frito-Lay guy at the store ordering, refilling the Fritos and potato chips. That's what they use on the handheld. A lot of enterprise asset management handheld type systems use it. So it's very robust. I've been working with it actually since I worked at Microsoft back in '95 on the Cassiopedia Windows CE 1.0 devices.
Yeah. No, and I remember an HP device, that a little PDA device that was running, probably from, this might have been from '99 or 2000.
Yes. Windows Mobile 3.0.
And that was a CE device as well. Yeah. So that, you know, that's an OS that just doesn't go away. I mean, Microsoft, in very quietly, no one outside of the tech industry knows about it.
Well, you know, it's your Windows Mobile.
Yeah. Right. What do you got there, Christian?
I'm unhearing a dusty monster that may or may not turn on.
Yeah. And what do you got there?
Oh, I had one of those.
Looking like it's not turning on, probably because I haven't charged it in forever.
That's okay. You should hold it up to the camera there. I got the camera up. And so tell us what that is.
This is a pocket PC.
Yeah.
E750. And this had the Let's see if I can get this off. Yeah, this is the big thing because I had the extended. I bought a super pack for this thing.
What year do you think? Oh, and that's got show the Windows logo on the back there.
That probably about 2002.
Okay.
Yep. Uh-huh. Yeah. And this originally came with.
I think it's huge.
Winmo 202, right? And then this thing died out for a while, and then there's kind of a revival when the 2003 OS came with a bunch of upgrades, and everyone wanted it, and no one could find it anymore. And I don't remember what it was I did, but eventually I found it lying around on the internet and wrote a guide, and this was my little hack tool throughout middle school. But it was quite a device.
My hack tool throughout middle school. Great.
Hey, I still have a Cassiopedia with the 2.0 CE on it that I use to connect into my Cisco routers. Via serial connection.
And it was a good deal. I mean, it had a B Wi-Fi card on it. Let's not hate, but I mean, I would be in. I had really quality days with this in middle school. I'd just be tapping on it and connecting the wireless networks and doing just enjoying the wonders of this device. But
Brian, Winmo then is based on CE as well, is that
yes.
right?
Yes.
Okay. Windows All Mobile. The way up to what's the highest version of Windows Mobile right now?
6.
Whatever's on your phone right now.
Windows Phone 7, but Windows. Well, mine's 6.5, but Windows Phone 7 is basically the continuation of that platform.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Okay, I did not know. I thought
it's a continuation. Or if you want it even better, take a look at your Xbox 360.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's a good chance. When I saw this, I had to post, and what I scared about is I'm finally going to have to get an Xbox 360 to run my house, and it's going to require an Xbox 360 Live account that Christian will be able to hack in on and take control of my house.
It's great.
Whoever called, I don't understand pegging me as a hacker. I mean, just because I ran around.
He's going to go work for NASA, not the NSA.
just because I ran around middle school with PDA. I mean, those were the days when, like, bringing in a personal computing device to school was, like, a big taboo back then. So
yeah, it was.
He didn't bring his Game Boy. He brought his CE.
Yeah, thank you. He sees how it is.
It paid off in the end, Christian. Be proud of it. It paid off for you in the end. So wait a minute, Brian. Let me go back for the average guy here. So what do you? I didn't get the connection about Xbox 360 and CE. What you're telling me that's built on top of that?
Yes.
So the Xbox OS or whatever that is an embedded
OS.
Really? I did not know that.
No.
Really?
How about that?
So it does really show up everywhere, but it's probably the most used OS that nobody knows about.
It's where Microsoft got its start. It originally started way back before it created DOS. It was creating the counters that happened at that would check how many cars were going over a road, the little ropes that go across the road. Right. Microsoft made that back in 76.
First project, just about. Maybe was, right?
Yeah. So they've always been in these embedded OS things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's good to know. I mean, I don't think that's that well known of, you know, of a fact.
Yeah. So
my Xbox runs a Linux kernel.
Well, your original Xbox, right?
Correct.
You hacked.
I remember when PS3 hacking, like, XP on it was, like, the big thing. Like, oh, my PS3 runs Windows XP. Hot stuff.
Just to scare Mike, we've got to remember I'm the person who touts the OS X Latitude all the time.
Yes, you do. You are a unique guy in that sense. Well,
hey, I like having my $20 MacBook running Lion.
Yeah. Well, that's back to this home OS that's in beta at the moment. And am I going to have to buy from what you know? Am I going to have to buy any special equipment to make that work, or does it only run on certain equipment, or how does that work?
Z-Wave is a standard. There's several different products out there. There's a Linux-based server you can buy. You can go out and buy a Schlage home automation kit for about $280 from Lowe's right now, and it'll include a lock that you can unlock from your cell phone for your front door. You can get a Train thermostat, which is what I always talk to people, because you can be in the dead of winter and your wife can be cold and you can turn up the thermostat without getting out of the bed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so, but I mean, what I mean, Brian, is that the OS itself...
It will be embedded in a product, basically. Okay.
So I can't load that. I can't pull an old PC off the shelf and load the OS on it.
From get-go, probably not, but what they'll probably end up doing is what they're... from what it looks like, is they're going to have it be a device. So you'll buy it just like you buy your Netgear or Linksys router.
Okay, so it might be a wall-mounted device that's got a screen on it.
It won't even probably have a screen. You'll buy the device, and it will be a server for you. Okay. All right, you go to the server just like you buy a wireless router to connect to your wireless. It'll be your server. All your Z-Wave devices you have connect to it.
Got it.
Through a Z-Wave gateway. And you can use it to control everything in the world and turn around and you do this. Down here where I live, I've got Verizon Fios, so everybody always yells at me for that one. But we actually have home automation built into our Fios routers and TV boxes now, where we can do home automation through the Verizon Fios setup. So I can do home automation for me going into my Fios router.
Okay. Yeah. I don't do any home automation. I say, children, turn off the lights.
I would do that, except for I leave before the children, and then they don't turn off the lights.
It is interesting. That is one area. You know, I love tech, and I love tech in my cars, and I love tech in my watches, and my running shoes, and my gear at work, and my gear at home. But that home automation just has not hasn't made its way. It's something I have not messed with very much.
To me, it started mainly for looking at thermostat controls.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get the programmable thermostats where you can, at 8 o'clock we bump it down and 9 o'clock we bump it up. But
I mean,
being in IT, especially when I first got married or when I first bought the house and I was single, you never know what time you're going to get home.
Right.
Okay. I live in Texas. So, I mean, we get hot down here, so I'll turn up the thermostat when I leave the house, and when I leave work, I can remote in, go through my phone, and turn down my house. So by the time I drive home, which is a 30-mile drive, my house is cool.
It's cool for you. You're not cooling it all day.
I'm not cooling it all day.
No, that's smart. That's smart. You know what would be even better is if your phone tweeted your home automation system that you're on your way, and by geolocation, it would just automatically...
They're getting that way. Like I said, I use my cell phone for opening my garage door.
Right. So. Which wouldn't work for me because I'm sure I would come home with the battery dead and then I wouldn't be able to get in the house.
So my definition of home automation, if in fact I decide to acquire the budget to do such things someday, it's going to involve a biometric scanner right on the front that I'm just going to put my finger up to open the garage. That's going to be the first thing. I'm going to have to work out
but
some
But then you
got to
get out of the car, Christian.
Yeah, you're going to have to get out of the car in Buffalo in the middle of January.
Wireless biometric scanner. Just
listen, it should just scan your face when you pull in.
Right. There's another option. And I'm thinking about, we could do so many things. The man cave where all things technology would happen. Oh, that would just be too cool.
You need
a retina scanner for the man cave.
Just the dreams that come from thinking of something so amazing like that.
It's the simple things. So you got to think of the simple ones. For me, it's like, wait a minute, I'm ready to crawl out of bed. Let me go ahead and start the coffee pot in the morning.
Yeah, but like My thrill would be like, all right, I got the sickest man cave in New York State. What are you going to do about it? And other people would reply, nothing. We need to go to the man cave because there's nothing better in New York State.
But Brian, it seems like you've made home automation real practical, right?
Yeah.
Like just what you said, right? I get out of bed, I walk over to my phone. I mean, my routine is my phone is my alarm clock now, right? I don't have a separate alarm clock. Yeah. It goes off. When I'm turning off the alarm clock, maybe it asks me a question. You know, do you want to start the coffee? Do you want to, you know, and I've got some push-button options, right, to get things rolling. Does the temperature need to come up or down, right? That kind of stuff, right?
It's making everything you saw in the Jetsons happen.
Right.
All right. But home automation goes from other things. You have the practical. You have embedded in mine is my I have video security at my house. so that I can check the front door and everything, because my wife can't see out the door. We have a little half moon at the top of the door. Well, my wife's 5'2", so she can't see out the top of the door. So we can put the video camera off that so she can see off her cell phone who's at the front door before getting out of the recliner to see if she needs to get it or not. So it's things like that. You can go back to when we were originally doing it, Microsoft back around 2000, was the fancy refrigerators that would scan everything as you picked it out, took it out of the fridge, so it created your grocery list and ordered. I'm not talking things.
It was a great idea. On paper, that sounded good, but nobody,
To me, it's the thermostat. How do I need a water? I mean, you live in the Midwest, so you know how bad water and drought can get during the summertime.
Right, yeah.
So do I need a water or not?
Yeah, I would love. So I assume you've got a moisture sensor in your lawn.
Yeah, right? I put a moisture sensor in the lawn, and I have working on the ladder logic right now so that it can auto-turn on my soaker hoses.
And does it also regulate the time of day that those come on based on, so it'll trigger it and then say only turn it on at 4 in the morning because I want the optimal watering time?
Yeah, I can set it. I can get it with the ladder logic to set it where it goes off at certain times because I'm putting it with soaker hoses. I don't have to worry about it being an off day because right where I'm at right now, I can water on Thursdays and Sundays are the only 2 days I can water.
Wow.
Because of water restrictions.
But with the soaker, you can do it anytime you want.
With soakers, I can do it anytime I want. Yeah, so it's doing stuff like that.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff there.
Plus, think of everything that you really do as far as your DVRs and HD home runs. All that would fall under home automation.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. I'm going to wrap that up here, though, because we've been doing this for a while.
I know I was perusing the streets, but come on, we got to have a little Christmas.
Do you have a deal?
I don't have it. Well, I have a future deal if you're an enterprise guru.
That's all right, go. For you. Go.
Intel just announced the super sweet 910 SSD lineup, and they're talking about sequential reads speeds of 2 gigabytes per second.
No.
Yes.
Yes.
2,000 megabytes per second read and 1,000 megabytes per second.
Theoretical, actually they're actually getting these?
No, they're actually getting these, and they come in 400 gigabyte and 800 gigabyte models. 400 gigabyte model can be yours for a nice price of $1,900, while the 800 is a classy in style $3,900, and this can all be yours for a deal of the week. It's more of a how do I think of this? In 10 years, it's going to be a fantastic deal of the week, but I'm giving you a taste of what it's going to be like.
Not 10 years.
No. Or next week for Fauché.
Yeah, that's right. What do you connect those to? I mean, what kind of connection do you have?
The PCI Express 8 slot.
Okay, so, and that has a special controller. Oh, that goes right into the slot.
Yeah, just like a graphics card, really nice and clean.
And 2 gig throughput.
Yeah.
Wow.
2 gig read.
That's about 4 times the speed of what theoretically we're getting off of SATA. SSD drives today, right? For the most part, those are mostly 500 meg.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, that's about right.
Okay, there's some out there
with about 600.
Yeah, but right now the fastest ones out there are 500 and 600 megs, and this is promising 2 gig.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't need anything if I had the right slot in my computer. I could put it in today for the cool price of $2,000.
Yes.
For 400 gig. Mm-hmm. That's pretty fast.
Be good.
What's transfer speeds to RAM?
That's a good question.
Anybody know? There's a question of the. We'll ask Chad or anybody out there, Brian. You know what transfer rates to RAM?
Well, 1066 or the 1600 series, you're getting right around 4,000.
So four?
Yeah.
4 gig?
Yeah.
Okay, so about the same. I mean, it's pretty close, right? I mean, well, it's half the speed of RAM. But
for hard drive.
Pretty close, right?
Hey, but it'll fit right in the microserver.
Yeah, that it will. That it will. All right, I'm getting one this weekend. No, I'm just kidding. So I'm not getting one this weekend.
And interesting little finance aspect of tech is that Yahoo Finance posted an interesting article for the average guy about who's watching you on Facebook. And one of the ones I was surprised but not surprised by was debt collectors are now basically essentially trolling Facebook looking for people who they need to pay back, who owe them money, and they're using now Facebook as a tool to accomplish that. So
does not surprise me.
Lock down your Facebook, guys.
You can't hide if you owe somebody money.
Yet another reason not to be on it.
Well, or just don't have debts that
yeah,
need to be collected.
One of the two.
Well, it's just like the people, the employers who are asking for your logins now for Facebook.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the rule is don't post anything on Facebook that will. You know, come on. Let's use
if you're not going to tell your pastor, don't put it on Facebook.
There you go. That's a good. We will end the show with that. If you can't tell your pastor it, don't put it on Facebook. I like that. Well, guys, I appreciate you coming out tonight. Brian, thanks for coming out and joining us for your first ever Home Tech podcast. I know you've been a listener almost since the beginning, right? We drug you over from the Home Server Show. You've been around for a while, jumping in chat all the time. It's always good to have you out there. And appreciate the work that you do to keep the chat room moving, to speak. Good to have you out tonight. Andrew, great to have you on after a while of not having you on or sporadically having you on.
Yeah, I'm back.
And I hope things will settle down for you there. Rich, of course, it's always good to see you and have you out and have you in your rotation spot here. We haven't done a random podcast in a while. Maybe one on the docket in the next 2 or 3 weeks, maybe?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe so.
All right, we'll see. We'll have to get there.
Kind of kicking back on that for a little bit. Yeah. Have them randomly.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll see what we can dig up.
Yeah,
and Christian,
I've been kind of distracted.
No pressure there. You've been messing with your phone. I get it. You know, it's all good. And Christian again, yeah, because you do need to be able to make phone calls at some point, right?
Yeah.
Christian, great having you on the podcast as well, and congratulations on your license and all that comes with it. And pretty soon we'll be broadcasting live from Virginia, right? And you'll be have some great stuff to tell us about what's going on for summer for you. So I'll remind folks, of course, if they have questions, I haven't gotten an email question or a question via Google Plus or Facebook. We're on all those platforms. Just search for the Average Guy Podcast on any of those, including iTunes. And you can send me a question as well via email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv, and we'll cover it on the show. It's always nice to have a little material from you guys, and we'll cover those questions, and hopefully we'll all learn something from it as well. We'll be back here next Thursday. Let me look at the calendar. Yeah, actually, one more Thursday, and then I'm taking a week off. So we'll be back next Thursday, and then I'm off the 26th.
Are you allowed to do that?
I don't think he is, actually.
the co-host has spoken.
Dave can do it from an iPhone or...
I'm planning to be actually... So I'll be in Vegas for Oracle's Collaborate, actually the user group's Collaborate 2012. So I'm Vegas Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So Greg, better get ready. I'll be down your way, Greg Welch, and get a chance to see him. I think on Monday night might be. And if you're in Vegas and you listen to the show, shoot me a note, maybe do a little meetup over there. I know Greg lives there for sure, but if you are down there, let me know. Come home on Thursday. I got some stuff planned. I'm going to go out to see a comedy show with a buddy that night. And then Friday morning we leave for Cincinnati, and we'll be gone through the weekend. So it'll be a busy week for me. And I need a week off. I can take that, right? Christian, is that all right? Can I take a week
off? Yeah, I'll give you permission.
All right, thanks. I'm sorry I didn't ask in advance.
Yeah, it's okay. You remember, I got to sign your slips to make sure.
I know. Because I know I'll be working for you someday.
Right, with the paid leave, I mean, it's courtesy.
All right, we'll be back next Thursday. have a good night, guys. Good night.
Sit here.